today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
Friends, if fame alone could give meaning to life, Solomon would have known it. But in his under-the-sun world, he realized how empty and how vain it was. And then he continued on there in verse 10, where he says, well, of course, his wisdom remained with him. But he went on to say in verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold from my heart any pleasure. Listen, when Solomon says that, that means something, right?
If you look at television, it seems that it's possible to be famous just by doing something that someone else is willing to take a video of. Looking behind the scenes, though, we also see that many of these same people actually live lives that are pretty tragic. Pastor David will teach on King Solomon, arguably the richest man in the world at that time, and is spending vast sums of money in pursuit of lasting fulfillment and happiness, and his failure to find satisfaction. Now, here's Pastor David with part one of his message, Time, Eternity, and Despair.
He takes the premise, let's just say that this life is all there is, then what does that mean for life and the way we live? So he's searching out what would it mean to live in this kind of a world. And in verse 1, he begins to now investigate another way to find meaning and satisfaction in a life that's disconnected from any thought of eternity. At the end of chapter 1, he developed the idea that I'm going to search out a life of wisdom and knowledge, not eternal wisdom, but just practical wisdom in the here and now, and see if that satisfies. And he found out it did not satisfy. Now, chapter 2, verse 1, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure, but surely this also was vanity. You see, the previous section saw Solomon look for the meaning of life in wisdom. Wisdom as it can be understood apart from eternity. And he found no wisdom. He found no meaning in skillful, wise living under the sun. Now he continues his search for meaning and instead focuses on a life filled with pleasure and amusement. I have to say that this is very relevant to our day and age. Do not many people today find, or at least attempt to find, I should say, the meaning of life in pleasure and amusement? That's just what life is all about. Having fun, entertaining oneself. Solomon said, okay, I'm going to try that and see if I can find true meaning of life in that. And so he says, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. Solomon tested life's meaning with mirth and pleasure. He tested the theory that many, many people live under today. That again, the meaning of life is found in more and varied pleasures, entertainments, and excitements. But now at the end of verse 1, he tells you the result of it. But surely this also was vanity. Almost as soon as he raises the issue, maybe meaning for life can be found in happiness, in mirth and laughter and excitement and entertainment. As soon as he raises the possibility, he smashes it down flat. Nope, it didn't work. Surely this also was vanity. And vanity has the idea of meaninglessness, emptiness. And so now he's going to describe more of the search after telling us the result. Verse 2, I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their life. So he evaluated it. And when he evaluated it, he said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? You see, Solomon tested the life lived for laughter and pleasure and fun. And like a modern celebrity, he went from party to party and entertainment to entertainment. But at the end of it all, he judged it all to be madness and without accomplishment. And I think anybody who's pursued that kind of life would give basically the same judgment. Oh, they wouldn't give it at first. Because at first there's just this exhilaration, there's this high, there's this activity, you keep busy enough, but you immerse yourself in that kind of life long enough, and you just take a serious look at the person in the mirror, and you say, what am I doing with my life? Where is this going? What's the point of it all? And that's why he could say of this, I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? And then he goes on, he says, I searched my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine and how to lay hold on folly. The preacher lived a life satiated with the pleasures of wine and light, frivolous amusements. He wanted to see what was good for the sons of men to do if this life is all there is. All right, I'll give it a try. I'll try all the sensation. I'll drink the best wines. I'll go to the best restaurants. I'll give myself the best experiences in this life and see if it really gives meaning to my life. I'm not talking about a fun diversion. I'm not talking about a pleasurable evening. What he's talking about is giving meaning to life. And so he describes the search further in verse 4. He says, I made my works great. I built myself houses. I planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. Now notice this, starting at verse 4, he pursues a life of pleasure and entertainment, but with a different spin on it. He says, I made my works great. You see, he looked for meaning not only in amusements, but also in great and legitimate accomplishments. He tried to give his life meaning through the satisfaction that comes through building and organizing and improving one's environment. It's as almost as he said, okay, look, I tried the pleasure thing. I tried the wine. I tried the fun. I tried the more. Okay, I knew it wasn't there. That was vanity. It was meaningless. But maybe the solution is hard work. It's accomplishment. And so, boy, he set himself to hard work. Did you understand the description that I just read to you? Gardens and orchards, male and female servants, herds and flocks, silver and gold. He acquired them. He organized them. It was all a finely tuned, well-running machine. Well done, Solomon. You're a great administrator. You're a great organizer. You're a great leader of men. You've got all these resources and you're steward over them well. And he looks at it and he says, if this life is all there is, it's meaningless. It's empty. You see, all those riches and accomplishments could not give true meaning to his life. If they could have, the preacher would have found it. And so the analysis from the search begins now at verse 9. He says, so I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled. And indeed, all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. Solomon's accomplishments rightly lifted him to prominence. I like what he says there in verse 9. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. It didn't make me crazy. I was still able to analyze things, at least in an under-the-sun kind of way. I think there's sort of something interesting in verse 9, if you noticed it. Solomon became famous. I became great. Isn't that what a lot of people think will give meaning to their life, right? Isn't that a common way of thinking today? If I could be famous, how about this? If I could be on television, oh, that would give my life meaning, right? And you find some twisted individuals today who are more than happy to humiliate themselves, to publicly disgrace their own lives and the lives of others, to even commit crimes just for the sake of making a name for themselves. So that people say, well, at least I was famous, that man or that woman could say. Listen, there's something very twisted in that. And Solomon explored it. Friends, if fame alone could give meaning to life, Solomon would have known it. But in his under-the-sun world, he realized how empty and how vain it was. And then he continued on there in verse 10, where he says, well, of course, his wisdom remained with him. But he went on to say in verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold from my heart any pleasure. Listen, when Solomon says that, that means something, right? Now, it'd be one thing if somebody among us said, I bought everything I wanted. And we'd know, oh, you know, we're fairly humble people buying everything we wanted. That's, what do you mean, a trip to the supermarket or something? Solomon, with the resources that man had at his disposal, listen, if there was any way just to search it all out and to say, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold from them any pleasure. As I said before, it's even more significant coming from Solomon, who had the resources to grant whatever his eyes desired, every pleasure of his heart. Solomon, you know how it was in his kingdom. I want that woman. It was brought to him. She became one of his concubines. I want that field. He bought it and paid double the price, and the man was happy to have the money. I want this. I want that. Whatever he wanted, it was brought to him. He didn't have to say no to himself on anything. Surely that will give meaning to my life. And even he found the good result of having a heart satisfied in labor. Did you see that? At the end of verse 10, he says, and this was my reward from all my labor. But then he says, for my heart rejoiced in all labor. You might say that the preacher lived this period as a hedonist, but he lived it as an intelligent one. He looked for the legitimate pleasures of life, such as the rightful pleasure one takes in the accomplishments of hard work. I mean, the way I work it in my mind is that Solomon lived a life, somewhat of a debauched life, right? An immoral life, you might say, looking for satisfaction in immoral pleasures. But he was wise enough to know that the answers weren't there, and he probably figured that out pretty fast, right? Okay, that's meaningless. That's not going to be the answer. But then he thought, ooh, good hard work and accomplishment. That seems to make men and women happy. And so he tried that. Then he said his heart rejoiced in all his labor. He found reward from all his labor. But look at the verdict right there at the end of verse 11. And indeed, all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. Now, please, I'm going to remind you again of that important phrase, under the sun. I worked really hard. But because the parameters of my world say that this life is all there is, it didn't accomplish anything. Now, you might question this. You might say, listen, Solomon, didn't you feel good because you built that building or you made that bridge or you planted that orchard or whatever it was? Didn't that give you some satisfaction? And in the following section, he's going to explain to us why even those good and legitimate pleasures of life ultimately had no meaning in an under-the-sun world. He'll explain it very plainly. Notice this. The answer to why they have no meaning is because you die. Right? Congratulations, Mr. Man or Woman of Accomplishment. You die and you don't take any of it with you. You're gone. In an under-the-sun premise, this life is all there is. So now that very painful proposition he begins to discuss in verse 12. Then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can the man do who succeeds the king? Only what is already done. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet my eye myself perceived that the same event happens to them all. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, so it also happens to me. And why then was I more wise? I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For if there's no more remembrance of the wise than of the fool forever, since all is now will be forgotten in the days to come, how does a wise man die? As the fool. Therefore, I hated life, because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me, for all is vanity and grasping for the wind. He says there very powerfully in verse 12 that he turned himself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. He continued to search after the meaning of life, and he followed the lines of wisdom. He followed the lines of madness. He followed the lines of folly further up until their ending point. And then he thought about the end of all things. So he said, what can the man do who succeeds the king? I think if he spoke of himself right there, I mean, in verse 12, what can the man do who succeeds the king? Solomon was a man who succeeded a king, right? His father David. But he also thought of the man who would succeed him. Hey, my father died. I'm going to die. My son's going to die. Death is there. And even for a king, there's nothing new under the sun. And then he says it very powerfully there, verse 13. I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Okay, great. It's better to be wise than it is to be foolish, right? Should we take a show of hands on this, right? What's better, wisdom or foolishness? Right, I think we understand that. Okay, Solomon, we got the point. But then notice he's going to deliver the hammer blow at the end of verse 14. Yet I myself perceived that the same event happens to them all. Do you know what the same event is? Death. You die. And in an under-the-sun world, with an under-the-sun premise, if this life is all there is, if your body goes into the grave and rots and that all there is, then you know what? Everything you accomplished means nothing. You say, well, no, it means something for my children. Well, he'll talk about that in a minute. Friends, in an under-the-sun world, death makes all things meaningless. The preacher saw the meaninglessness of even wise living, of legitimate pleasures, and of accomplishment lived in a life under the sun, apart from the knowledge of eternity and of a God who really matters. You see, no matter how wise one is or is not, no matter how much they do or do not accomplish, no matter how much pleasure one has or does not have, the same event happens to them all. They all die. And given the preacher's premise that eternity and God do not ultimately matter, this is the only possible conclusion. And you can see how it tortures him. Look at what he says in verse 15. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why then was I more wise? Well, congratulations. I'll be the wisest man to have his life mean nothing and have it destroyed when I die. What, did they give you some kind of ribbon for that? But who cares? I'm gone. It's meaningless. If death ends it all, then this life is robbed of true meaning. And even the good and great accomplishments of the world are unbelievably temporary and therefore ultimately meaningless. The wise man dies just as the fool. And truly, the preacher looked at this, and at the end of verse 15, he says, this also is vanity. And then you saw it very powerfully in verse 17, where he says, therefore, I hated life, for all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Now, again, given his premise of life under the sun, Solomon hated life because it was so meaningless. It was vanity. It was grasping for the wind. You can picture that, can't you? Somebody trying to grab the wind. How's that working out for you? You can't do it, can you? It's meaningless. It has no purpose. Like what Derek Kidner said about this phrase, therefore I hated life. He said this, if there is a lie at the center of existence, and nonsense at the end of it, who has the heart to make anything of it? Another thing Derek Kidner says here, he says, the preacher, he has no illusions about it. He knows it all ends. And then meditating on it even further, he saw that it was even worse than he thought. Verse 18. Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me, right? I'll leave it to my kids. That's a solution. That'll give my life meaning. Look at the next line. And who knows whether he'll be wise or a fool? Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I've toiled, in which I've shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore, I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what has man for all his labor and all the striving of his heart with which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful and his work burdensome. Even in the night, his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. You see, not only did Solomon hate life under this thinking, he hated even the accomplishments of his life. He said, I hated all my labor. He said of all of them, this is vanity. You see, the idea that Solomon might leave all of his work and all of his material wealth to a fool seemed to trouble him. And can I say something? That concern was well-founded because he left all of it to his son, Rehoboam. By the way, just a little throwaway line here. Did you know that Solomon, even though he had 700 wives and 300 concubines, he had one son that we know of, one heir, and he was a fool. His name was Rehoboam. And you can just imagine Solomon. I don't know if he could see it when he wrote Ecclesiastes or he just thought about the possibility of it, but it drove him crazy. Look at all I've accomplished, and I got to leave it to him? Truly, it's meaningless. Rehoboam turned out to be a fool in many ways. And it drove him crazy. He says, there's a man whose labor is with wisdom and knowledge and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. Under his premise, life under the sun, death haunted Solomon. Not in the sense that he was afraid to die, but that he despaired of how death, if death ends our existence, how it makes all meaningless. Therefore, he goes so far to say that all his days are sorrowful, his work burdensome, even in the night his heart takes no rest. If death robs all of our work of meaning, then life indeed is sorrowful, work is burdensome, and there's no rest or relief from the despair of a meaningless life. Surely, also, it is vanity. Could I say this? It's actually worse than vanity. The preacher observed that in an under-the-sun world, it's also evil. This is a great evil, he says at the end of verse 21. It's worse than vanity. Now, in dealing with all this, I hope there's nobody here too depressed by all of this, even though, boy, this is tough stuff, isn't it? But in this, the preacher hints at a vital question. Why does this bother us? Really? Let's just step into an under-the-sun world for a minute, right? In an under-the-sun world, let's say you believe in materialistic evolution, that God has nothing to do with creation, that we're just here by fortunate circumstances and all the rest of it. There's no meaning to life or existence, and when you die, brother, sister, you're dead. That's it. Let's enter into that kind of world just for a moment. Why does that bother us? If that's how it's been since millions or billions of years, and that's where we are right now, it should be so programmed into us that it shouldn't bother us just for a moment.
That's all the time for today on Enduring Word Radio. We pray that you've been blessed by today's message from the book of Ecclesiastes. And we hope you join Pastor David again for more from this fascinating Old Testament book. There's so much to learn from the Word of God, and sometimes studying the Bible on our own can be a bit overwhelming. Pastor David has created a very helpful tool to enhance your time in the Word, and he's here to tell you more about it.
Thanks, Josh. Over the years, God has led me to write helpful, easy-to-understand commentary through the Bible, and I'm so happy to share them with you. When you explore the Enduring Word Bible Commentary, you'll find helpful guides spanning Genesis to Revelation, unlocking the blessings and the promises the Bible has to offer. We're making these commentaries available in written format as well as audio, and you can find them by visiting our website at enduringword.com.
Thanks, Pastor David. That website again is enduringword.com. If you've been touched by today's message or have any questions about Enduring Word, please feel free to email us through our website or give us a call at 805-730-1400. That number again is 805-730-1400. We always enjoy hearing from our listeners and finding out how we can pray for you on your journey with Jesus. Be sure to check the time and make note to join us again on Enduring Word for more from Pastor David in the book of Ecclesiastes.